ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भागवतम चैप्टर 19 एंटाइटल्ड किंग ययाति अचीव्स लिबरेशन। दिस टेक्स्ट 5 एंड 6। वी विल रीड टेक्स्ट 5 टुगेदर। सोतीर्य कुपत सुश्रोणी तमेव चकमे किला तया वृत्तम समुद्विक्ष्य भाव्यो जा कांत कामिनी। सो पिवानाम शमश्रुलाम प्रेष्टाम मिद्वांसाम या भकोविदाम स एको झावरसस तस्तासाम भाविनाम रतिवर्धन रेमे कामाग्रहा कृष्टा आत्मानाम नवभूद्यता। सिनोनिम्स। So, when the she-goat who had very nice hips got out of the well and saw the very handsome he-goat, she desired to accept him as her husband. When she did so, many other she-goats also desired him as their husband because he had a very beautiful structure and a nice mustache and beard and was expert in discharging semen and in the art of sexual intercourse. Therefore, just as a person haunted by a ghost exhibits madness, the best of the he-goats, attracted by the many she-goats, engaged in the erotic activities and naturally forgot his real business of self-realization. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Materialists are certainly very much attracted by sexual intercourse. Yan maitunadi grahamedi sukham hituccham. Although one becomes a grahastha or householder to enjoy sex life to his heart's content, one is never satisfied. Such a lusty materialist is like a goat. For it is said that if goats meant for slaughter get the opportunity, they enjoy sex before being killed. Human beings, however, are meant for self-realization. Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam shuddhyet yasmad brahma saukyam tvanantam. Human life is meant for realization of the self, the spiritual soul within the body, dehinosmi yata dehe. The materialist rascal does not know that he is not the body, but a spiritual soul within the body. However, one should understand his real position and cultivate knowledge by which to get free from bodily entanglement. Like an unfortunate person who acts madly haunted by ghosts, a materialist haunted by the ghost of lust forgets his real business so that he can enjoy so-called happiness in the bodily concept of life. Hare Krishna. We are in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's edging towards the 10th canto, the pastimes of Lord Krishna. One may wonder, when we are going towards such a pure object, why are we discussing something so impure? And why does Srimad Bhagavatam at all speak about such stories? We will discuss that shortly. But before I begin, I would like to tell one story. This is a man who was trying to impress a girl, and you know, for trying that, he was very poor. So what he did was he borrowed different, you know, parts of the clothing from different friends of his. He borrowed a shirt from one friend, a pant from one friend, a tie from one friend, a coat from another, and then he presented himself nicely in front of his girlfriend, and she was very impressed. Similarly, I may be speaking some things here which may be out of my realizations. I'm just borrowing from different devotees and from different parts of the scriptures, just putting them together for the pleasure of the deities and for the pleasure of all the devotees here. So kindly accept, and hopefully the end result will be pleasing. And so basically we will begin with this discussion, what for one should study the Srimad Bhagavatam. To understand this, let us understand, why does a mother serve a child? The mother goes out of her way to serve her child. She practically on a 24-hour call, anytime she is ready to serve. So what is that impetus? What is the reward that she gets by serving her child? One impetus that really, you know, touches every mother's heart is to see the gleaming face of the child when he is smiling. That, you know, drives her for doing more and more for the child. Similarly, when devotees render services, and such services are definitely bound to get results, and finally, you know, the devotee will find the Lord coming in front of him and smiling. Similarly, the study of the Srimad Bhagavatam also, it has its benefits. And people in this world, is very nice understanding, people in this world actually suffer for things that they can't even account for. You know, there are many, many times people, you know, you find in this world, they don't know why they're suffering. They know that they're suffering, but they can't account what is the exact reason they're suffering. This is the paradox of this world. In fact, what to speak of anybody else? Even Vyasadeva, the original spiritual master, the writer of the Vedas, he was suffering at some point of time. After writing all the Vedic scriptures, after writing the four Vedas, after writing the 108 Upanishads, after writing 18 Puranas, after writing the Vedanta Sutra, after writing the Mahabharata, he was suffering. But he himself couldn't find the cause of his suffering. And then Narad Muni had to interfere and show him. And then when he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he experienced happiness. Then he experienced satisfaction. So even, so if we carefully study the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the remedy to such sufferings. And the example of Vyasadeva is there. If the person who wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam is remedied immediately of his sufferings, then definitely the hearer and the reader of Srimad Bhagavatam will be helped. Here in this verse, Srila Prabhupada talks about how family life is like a deep dark well. Elsewhere also Prabhupada comments how family life is compared to a grahamanda koopam. And in this story very much graphically describes it. You know, here is a person who is entering into family life, and his would-be wife is inside a well. And the funny part is when the he-goat actually wants to rescue the she-goat, rather than getting her out, he actually digs and goes in. So in fact, this is how you understand a material entanglement as. Just like a person, you know, who has, Shamanand Prabhu is giving this nice example. Suppose, you know, somebody by mistake touches tar, you know, which is like wet tar. And the tar is stuck on his hand now, and you know, he's trying, he wants to get out. He wants this tar to be removed from his hand. So if he uses his other hand, you know, try to pull the tar out, second hand also gets stuck. Now both the hands are stuck with tar, you know, and then he uses his leg, one leg to, that leg also stuck, he uses the other leg. So practically his whole body is stuck with tar now. So many times, people find that one material approach seems to be a solution for another material problem. But what it does is that it entangles more and more and more. So when Yayati, you know, went into the well, actually what he never came out of it, nor did Devayani come out of it. In fact, they kept going inside and inside and inside, right? That's how Grahamanda Koopam is to be understood. And if you want to analyze what are the three factors in this world which attract, you know, the attention of modern youth, or for that matter anybody else, if you summarize it, see all the movies, see all the novels, see all the advertisements, there are three things prominently. One is display of cruel violence, second is display of carnal love, and third is suspense. So these are three things that, you know, attract anybody's attention. And if you observe, the Srimad Bhagavatam gives all these three things in completeness. So even if you consider it that way, the Srimad Bhagavatam is complete. And therefore, you know, you have stories like this of Balramji killing Dhenukasur. You know, you'll find the greatest acts of violence, hundreds of donkeys killed, hundreds of trees broken, you know. When you find in the movies, you know, that one hero and a villain trying to fight, and they destroy a whole hotel, they destroy a whole, you know, practically a street, you know. So the same thing Balramji did, but he did it, you know, in a very interesting way. So, so basically this is, there are many such pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam of acts of cruel violence.
You see the pastime of Krishna killing Jarasandha, Jarasandha's army, you'll find descriptions of rivers of blood in which arms are flowing, you know, heads are flowing, and you know, so many descriptions, which is very attractive to people who are attracted to violence. And then there is stories of suspense of Putana entering Vrindavan in the form of a young lady. So the reader, as he keeps reading, his suspense keeps increasing. What will happen? Will the Vrajvasis allow her inside Nanda Maharaj's house? Then she's walking. It doesn't explain which house she's going. She just walks. So the suspense is increasing step by step. You know? Will she enter into Nanda Maharaj's house or will she not? And then she enters. Then will Yashoda and the other gopis allow Krishna to be, held by her or not? And then Krishna is held. And then, will Krishna react or not? And, escape. No, Krishna doesn't. And Putana actually feeds her. And then the suspense again increases more. Will Krishna actually drink the milk or not? Like that. The suspense is there in every episode of the Bhagavatam. Even the Ramayana is filled with suspense where Mother Sita gives Hanumanji 30 days for Ram to come and rescue her. And Ram actually, exactly on the 30th day, he saves Mother Sita. And then again, you will find in the Srimad Bhagavatam stories like this. The story of Yayati and Devyani, where it talks about carnal love. So at least when people, even for these things, come to read the Srimad Bhagavatam, the effect with what it has on the mind and the consciousness is not the same. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't negatively affect the mind, but rather it helps to confirm one's faith that we have in the power of the Lord. Because every story of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it doesn't just describe a love affair and then finish it off. That's, they live happily ever after. No, it talks about misery after that. Because, no movie ends, after marriage what happens. It doesn't talk. But then Srimad Bhagavatam vividly talks about what happens after they enjoy. So in every pastime, this is what is the highlight. It goes into the reality of life. And just like there's a story of a boy who was, sitting on the edge of a well and eating a very, very sweet and nice fruit which he got somehow. And just while he was eating this fruit, somehow the fruit falls into the well. And now, he has just eaten half and the half the fruit has fallen in. So he desperately wants that remaining half to eat it. So he somehow, puts a hook and he, gets the fruit out. But when he gets the fruit out, along with the fruit comes a gold chain also. So he's like, completely surprised that, I just wanted to get the fruit, but along with it came the gold chain also. So similarly, people may read the Srimad Bhagavatam for such, carnal pastimes, or they may read the Srimad Bhagavatam for cruel violence, or they may read for, acts of suspense. But even if they read the Srimad Bhagavatam for such things, then the gold comes along with it. What is that gold? The gold is the conclusions and the spiritual experiences that come along with it. So upliftment is guaranteed. Just like you put, you touch fire, it's guaranteed it's going to burn. So similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam is guaranteed. Even if somebody studies it for these things, naturally it will act. So therefore, the scriptures are considered to be like a setu or a bridge. And what is this bridge, covering? Basically, the bridge is covering the bridge of ignorance and the gap between ignorance and knowledge. And we are on one side and the scriptures take us to the other side. Or the scriptures can also be compared to an elevator. The elevator goes upwards and you can stop the elevator at any point. You can get down at any of the floors, or you can go on top straight to where the party is going on. So the scriptures can take you to higher and higher dimensions depending on what your consciousness is and what your desire is. And the Srimad Bhagavatam definitely takes us to higher realms. And therefore, we find in this, purport, Prabhupada is mentioning how, in this world people are mad about externals. And in the madness of trying to enjoy, he compares, this madness of enjoyment to a ghost attack. Very interesting comparison. And generally, if you observe this, the general tendency of people, people talk about, you know, they say that I will enjoy this way, I will enjoy that way. They talk about I will enjoy. But, you know, no one talks about I am satisfied. You know, when people say, you know, I'm going to enjoy this way, I'm going to enjoy that way, after that experience of trying to enjoy in that way, do they, after that, come and say, I'm satisfied? That is a word that hardly comes out from people. Because every act of enjoyment leads to a certain extent of dissatisfaction. Because the nature of this world is that the more objects of the senses go in, the more there is voidness in the mind. It almost seems it's incomplete, you know. You need more, you need more, you need more. And therefore, the madness of enjoyment is compared to a ghost attack. Just like, you know, there's a nice story of one man, his name was Durachar. And he was a Brahmana, born in a Brahman family. But this man, somehow he got into all kinds of sinful activities. And he was completely neglected his duties as a Brahmana. And one time he was walking through the forest. And suddenly a ghost attacked him. And, you know, he was like completely captured by a ghost. And he lost all sense. And because the ghost attacked him, he would just roam around here and there, you know. And finally, the ghost one day, you know, the ghost would just direct him anywhere according to its whims and fancies. So one day, by mistake, the ghost pushed him into the Dhanushkoti River. You know, the confluence, Dhanushkoti. And he fell into the waters, Dhanushkoti. Because those waters are pure, you know, the ghost ran away from there. He just escaped from there. So similarly, from this story, we can understand that somebody might be attacked by, you know, this ghost of madly enjoying this world. But the pure Bhagavatam or the pure scriptures, if injected through the ears, it has the potency to drive away the ghost. And then you become normal and you can practice your life normally. And so therefore, you know, when we talk about consciousness, what is the consciousness of a person who, you know, who is attached to? So therefore, you know, in this particular place, if you read this purport nicely, what it talks about is external attachment. It talks about external attachment. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, it talks about cultivating the internal more. And somebody who has this mode of cultivating the internal more, what is his, you know, understanding of life? His understanding is the mood of sacrifice, the mood of yajna. And, you know, therefore, the symbolic representation of yajna or sacrifice is fire. Fire means purification. And when somebody does yajna or fire sacrifice, what is poured in? You pour in ghee. You pour in the most pure things. So therefore, sacrifice signifies burning. Sacrifice signifies pain. And sacrifice signifies the spirit of sacrificing what is dear to one. That means, you know, ghee is definitely dear to anyone because it's valuable. You sacrifice that into the fire. And costly ingredients sacrifice into the fire, right? Sometimes you take huge amount of, you know, dry fruits, sacrifice into the fire. And in the subtle sense, what is the meaning of a sacrifice? Following regulative principles. Commitment is again a sacrifice. And sacrificing the tendency of enjoying, sacrificing the ego, and following the spiritual master. These are levels of sacrifice on a subtle level. And then, if you analyze another way, as a result of sex, what do you get? You get a son. And what does getting a son or a daughter mean? It means raising them in a God-conscious way, which is again an act of sacrifice. What does it mean that, you know, spiritual master accepts a disciple, or disciple accepts a spiritual master? That means again it's a sacrifice. What is the sacrifice? Sacrifice to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. And if you, even if somebody wants material well-being, what is the sacrifice involved there? The sacrifice that is involved there is that it is a sacrifice, which means it's a sense of responsibility to use the things in the right way. Again, it's a sacrifice. It's not just for enjoyment. So the Vedic process of getting a son, you know, it occurs through three ways. By discharge of semen, that is you know, a son by destiny. And by initiation is the son by inspiration. And by the process of yajna is a son by the intervention of the divine powers. So basically, all the methods of Vedic sacrifices, they ultimately depend on the Supreme Lord. It's a very interesting statement which I heard. We know about in the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that there are five factors which control any action. The five factors are, the first one is the person who is acting. The second is the instruments which are used. Third is the place where the action is carried out. And the fourth one is the types of endeavors. And there's a fifth factor which is called Daiva, which is the hands of God, the control of God. And it is said that non-recognition of the fifth factor is called research. And recognition of the fifth factor is called devotion. The simple understanding. So if somebody recognizes the fifth factor, that means the control of God in his life, in everything, so then that is an act of devotion. But if you don't recognize, then you research. Try to find, you know, how God is not there in every aspect of this world, right? And you know, you'll find that there are two words in the Gita which can practically change our perspective of life, which Krishna says. He says, mat arpanam. If somebody, you know, can just follow in his whole life these two words, mat arpanam, whatever you do, do it as an offering to Krishna, offering to the Lord. That changes the whole perspective of life completely. Do whatever you want in this world, but as an offering to Krishna. Right? So Krishna never talks about don't do this, don't do that. He talks about do everything, but do it as an offering to him. So even the aspect of sex life is not contaminated or is not condemned in the scriptures, but rather when it is done as an offering to Krishna, in the service of him and the child who is born in the right perspective, that is Krishna himself, right? Therefore, sacrifice in this world is very much appreciated. You know, people love this concept of sacrifice. In fact, you will find that even now, after decades and decades and decades of, you know, India's freedom, if people hear, you know, some very powerful vibrations of the freedom struggle, even now people cry, right? Many of our devotees who are attached to the freedom struggle so much, even they experience great emotions. And because the spirit of sacrifice touches the heart. And therefore, you will find, why is it? Because sacrifice is a property of the soul. And you will find in the scriptures, is filled with such acts of sacrifice. In the story of, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the story of Shivas Thakur, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in his house along with all his associates, you'll find that suddenly, you know, Shivas Thakur understands that his son has died, you know, in the inner rooms. And then he goes inside and instructs his wife and the other relatives that if, you know, they should not wail, not cry, and just control themselves, because that is going to disturb Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan. So this is basically, you know, sacrificing. What did Shivaji Thakur do? Sacrifice the pain of the father for the pleasure of the Lord, right? And you'll find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Bali Maharaj is being tested by Vamanadeva. And when Bali actually, you know, passes the test and surrenders everything to Vamanadeva, what is he sacrificed? He sacrificed the feelings of his ego, right? Give up the ego of being the king. And again, in the Ramayana, you'll find Vishwamitra asking Dasharath for his son. And Dasharath gave up his son, Ram. And again, you'll find the sacrifice of seeing his son go. So Dasharath did the Putra Kameshti Yajna, and Vishwamitra did the Moksha Kameshti Yajna. You'll find this. So therefore, you know, because Vishwamitra was concentrating on higher aspects of life, therefore he felt that he could give Ram more at this point of time, and therefore Dasharatha had to sacrifice Lord Ram for some time. And again, in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll find Arjun sacrificing his tendency of compassion towards the instruction of the Lord. And you'll find in the Mahabharata, when Yaksha Prashna, this episode of Yaksha asking questions to Maharaj Yudhishthir comes, and then he had to choose, you know, which of his brothers he could revive. He chose, you know, the sons of Madri. And then Yaksha was completely surprised that why did he choose the sons of Madri? Because according to the calculations externally, it seemed that they were not the best choice. Bhima and Arjuna would probably have been much better. But then, again, this is a spirit of sacrifice. Understanding the feelings of and being sensitive, right? So the scriptures always talk about, and I mean, we hear so many other pastimes, Vritrasu's mood, the mood of Dadichi in sacrificing his bones for a higher purpose. And we hear of Jatayu's sacrifice. And we hear the epitome of sacrifice of Vasudeva and Devaki, you know, when they had to see the death of so many sons in front of their eyes for Krishna to appear. And when, you know, there's a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, which says, Kim dushanam na sadhu nam vidusham kim apekshitam kim akaryam kadaryanam dustyajam kim dhritatmanam. It says, what is painful for saintly people, saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be dependence for the pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as a substance? What deeds are forbidden for the person of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of the of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? Here this verse describes how devotees who have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, they're ready to give up anything. What they cannot give up, you know, for the sake of Lord Krishna. And this is very, you know, prominently exhibited in the life of Vasudeva and Devaki. So the concept of sacrifice is the concept that talks about internal life, or the concept of seeing the externals from the internal perspective, rather than seeing the external, seeing the internal from the external perspective. Because when we see externally things, they seem to be totally different. But when we see things internally, and then through the eyes of the inner vision, we see things externally, there's a very different approach towards understanding. And therefore, you know, when there's a very nice example of how when somebody sends a letter to, you know, to a certain destination, first thing is that, you know, there's a postal address on an envelope. That postal address indicates the goal or the destination. But unless there is a stamp, and what does the stamp indicate? The stamp indicates the value. You know? So similarly, in both are important. So it's not that the address is important or the stamp is important. Unless both are there, you will not reach the destination. Similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam and the scriptures give us the goal as well as the value system, you know, which helps us reach that goal. And therefore, when we follow, you know, such both the value system as well as the final address which is written, then we reach the final destination. And how the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, actually helps us, you know, we can understand with a very nice example. Allopathic medicine, many times, it recognizes the body as a bag of chemicals. And when, you know, if something goes wrong, then the solution is pump more chemicals in, and, you know, things might get all right. But many times, even after you pump hundreds of chemicals, still things don't get better, because they don't recognize two other factors within the body, that is the Atma and the Paramatma, which very much integrate with the body. And therefore, they are very much active participants. So therefore, a person who can withdraw the senses from the externals and turn towards the internals and explore, such a person can envision other possibilities. And you know, we will now just analyze how each of our senses, we are just going to analyze a few of the associates of the Lord, how their senses were mesmerized by the presence of Krishna in their life. And we will see how the same effect can be there in our life if we can, you know, experience the presence of Krishna in our lives. So I'm going to just take one sense and then analyze how, you know, each sense there are certain devotees who have been mesmerized by that aspect of Krishna in their lives. So if you take the eyes, when Vasudev saw Krishna for the first time, when Krishna was born to Devaki and he was, you know, lying on the ground, Vasudev, the first, you know, the words that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam is that Visamaya Utfala Vilochana Harim. It says, what was happening to his eyes? It is said the eyes were struck with wonder. And the next thing in the same verse, it says that as soon as Vasudev saw Krishna, his eyes were struck with wonder. But after that, what did he feel? The first thing he felt was he wanted to give 10,000 cows in charity. That was the first thing he felt. So, to celebrate. So when we see the beauty of Krishna, the first thing that happens to you is that you want to give. But when you see the beauty of this world and you want to, you know, you try to enjoy the beauty of this world, the first thing you want to do is exploit. So the concept of giving is born as soon as there is vision of Krishna. And the concept of exploiting is born as soon as the vision is taken off Krishna. And so basically, you know, simple, you know, when we talk about the recent cricket match, we saw how people, they went to enjoy, they went to see something, you know, according to them, beautiful. But then what was the result, end result of seeing that so-called beauty? The end result was extreme degree of exploitation. The greatest number of, you know, acts of, you know, illicit sex, the acts of intoxication, the acts of liquor, everything was rampant because of seeing such externals. And when the elderly gopis of Vrindavan, when they would watch Krishna and Balaramji and all the cowherd boys walk out of Vrindavan, they would be mesmerized by the form of the Lord and they would keep watching the Lord walking out till, you know, they could practically not see at all, till the horizons. And then there would be dust. And they would keep seeing the dust for long. Because even the dust which comes out from Krishna's feet are as mesmerizing enough as Krishna. Because what to speak of dust? Even the light coming out from the body of Krishna is so mesmerizing that the impersonalists are very happy about with it. So anything coming out from the Lord is definitely mesmerizing. And the gopis of Vrindavan, the younger gopis, they would compare their eyes. Their eyes are compared to bumblebees. And the lotus face of Krishna to be like, you know, to be like a lotus. And the bees are just attracted to the lotus of Krishna's face. And therefore, they cursed Brahmaji, you know, by saying that he was a very bad creator because he gave eyes that blink. And of course, Brahmaji also gave eyes to some of the animals which don't blink, like the camel. It has transparent eyelids. You know, maybe the gopis would have felt, you know, that camel's eyes would have been good for them, right? Because they, it never, you know, even if they blink, it's transparent, so they can still see Krishna. And the ears, if you analyze the ears, when you think of Vishnu, what is the first thing that comes in your mind? The disc. When you think of Ram, what is the first thing that comes in your mind? The bow. And when you think of Krishna, what is the first thing that comes in your mind? The flute. The sound, what is Krishna's flute? What is the sound that comes out from Krishna's flute? Is the breath of Krishna. The mesmerizing breath of Lord Krishna. And when Krishna blows his, this is actually the original sound, this Shabda. When we talk about Shabda Praman, the Shabda Praman originates from the flute of Lord Krishna, which comes out from the breath of Lord Krishna. And that is the authority. So Krishna's blowing of the flute is the authority for everything in this world. And therefore, when Krishna blew his flute, In the middle of the night, the gopis left everything to answer Krishna's call. Because here is Shabda Brahman, the authority calling them. And, you know, understanding, I don't know, they understood the philosophy, but they were externally simple girls. But still, they understood the deepest philosophies. Because they understood that this sound that comes out from Krishna's flute is not an ordinary sound, but it is the original Shabda Brahman. And when they heard Krishna's flute, Many of them were hardly dressed. Many of them were, you know, taking care of the children. Many of them were cooking. Many of them were doing so many activities. Each one dropped everything they were doing and ran to answer Krishna's calling. So many times when Krishna's calling comes, how do we retaliate? How do we respond? Do we say we have something else to do or do we run? That shows our faith in Krishna's calling. And in fact, you know, many of the gopis, it is said that they were not even properly dressed and they still ran away to meet Krishna. It seems a very contradictory thing because women generally, you know, they would prefer to be very well dressed before, you know, meeting. And this is if you analyze it from today's world perspective, if, you know, when there is a mundane love affair and the boy and the girl meet, they would be wanting to be best dressed to, you know, to present themselves because they're depending on externals. And here are the gopis, they are not depending on externals, they are only depending on the consciousness. And therefore, whatever was the state of their externals, they ran. And this is the right mood of approaching Krishna. And again, we hear about Parikshit Maharaj when he says that he is drinking the Srimad Bhagavatam through his ears. And, you know, and actually, you know, because he's drinking the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam, he feels no hunger or thirst, which he actually demonstrated by not eating or drinking for 7 days and seven nights. So he was actually drinking Krishna through his ears. And if you take the example of Rukmini never heard Krishna's flute like the gopis. What did Rukmini hear? Rukmini, she would have, you know, in her kingdom, many, many guests would come from different parts, you know, of the world. And many guests would come to her palace and talk about Krishna. Talk about Krishna's activities, talk about Krishna's beauty, talk about Krishna's pastimes. And just by hearing Krishna, about Krishna like this, she developed an attraction to Krishna. So it is not that, you know, you have to only hear Krishna's flute and only then, you know, you'll develop love for Krishna. Krishna's activities, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's beauty is as good as hearing Krishna's flute only, right? And therefore, Rukmini demonstrated this. And then, you know, in Rukmini's case, it is said that, you know, she had guests in her house who would talk about Krishna. So what does it mean? Who is a guest? A true guest is one who actually enlightens about the Lord. And then, you know, the gopis of Vrindavan, it was very, very interesting. One devotee I was hearing, he was mentioning this. The gopis in Vrindavan, they were looking at birds in the trees. And the birds in the trees, they would, you know, take off during the day. Whole day they would search for different things and come back in the evening and sit on their nest and close their eyes. And actually, that's the way the birds sleep. The gopis were analyzing it very differently. They were saying that when the birds would come back and sit on their nest and they would hear Krishna's flute, they would close their eyes so that they can meditate on this sound all night long. And they close their eyes so that the sound vibration would not escape from them. And the whole night they were meditating on the sound vibrations of Krishna's flute. And the gopis are feeling that we wish we were like them. We could meditate. And then the touch of Lord Krishna. All of us lost contact with God at some point of time. And therefore we are in this material world. You will find exhibitions of this many times in the scriptures. The pastime of Ahilya, where she became a stone and basically inert. And then Lord Ramachandra, with his touch of his feet, he, you know, got her back. And then you'll find the pastime of Vamanadev touching Bali Maharaj on his head and then, you know, giving all perfection to Bali. And then you'll find Nalakuvera and Manigriv, you know, while Krishna was pulling the motor, wooden grinding motor, it got stuck. But definitely, the lotus feet of Krishna would have touched the roots or some part of the tree, you know, which Nalakuvera and Manigiri were. And what to speak of different parts of Krishna being used to kill different demons, right? Krishna used different parts of his body to kill different demons. He used his mouth to kill Putana. He used his, you know, hands to kill, our, Keshi, he used his fist actually, and he used his arms to kill Bakasur. They ripped open Bakasur, and he used his legs to kill Shakatasur, and he used his whole body to kill Trinavarta, like that. So if you analyze, different parts of body of Krishna were also used so nicely, and each part had a very similar effect of liberating and increasing the consciousness. And what to speak of Kaliya? When Krishna was dancing on Kaliya's head using his lotus feet, after that, when Krishna actually stopped, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, they came and they were praying to Krishna. And one of the prayers that Nagapatnis make is that your feet have been, Kaliya's head has been touched by your lotus feet. And then they talk about how the kingship of the heavens, the kingship of Lord Brahma's post or any other material benediction in this world is useless for a person whose head has been touched by the lotus feet of the Lord. It's like saying that if you give a small child if the small child is in a mother's lap and different people come and give the child chocolate, or somebody else comes and gives the child some teddy bear, or somebody else comes and gives the child something else, the child is least bothered. Why? Because he's clinging on to his mother, which is the most dear object for him. Similarly, for those who have clinged on to the Lord, for them, the material assets, be it the heavenly kingdoms, or be it Brahmaloka, be it anything else, they are insignificant because they've got the touch of Lord Krishna. And similarly, the tongue or the power of speech, if the tongue is used in praising the Lord, it actually justifies its existence. And you'll find in the Bhagavatam different instances where Indra offends Krishna using his tongue. And then you'll find an instance where Brahmaji offends Krishna by doubting him. And then the same personalities come back to Krishna and they offer their prayers. And that way, each one uses their tongue to serve Krishna. And in fact, even people who criticize Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see that criticism also turns into praise. Like for instance, in the pastime of kidnapping of Rukmini, when Krishna kidnaps Rukmini, the brother of Rukmini, comes and challenges Krishna. And while challenging Krishna, Rukmini says, he abuses Krishna. He says, "Stand over here, you defiler of the Yadu dynasty." He tells like that to Krishna. So then, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says that actually Saraswati, was in the tongue of Rukmi, and she kind of changed the meaning. What it meant was, "O protector of the Yadu, stand here so that I can glance upon you." Saraswati kind of interpreted it. And then another instance, Rukmi tells Krishna that he calls Krishna a crow who is stealing sacrificial butter, And then he tells her, you release her or I will make you lie down on the ground, dead. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, what he says that actually what Rukmi meant was, he should be lying on a flower bed with Rukmini. And then Chanura, while he was fighting with Krishna, before he actually starts the fight, he tells Krishna that you will have nowhere to escape. You can't go and hide beneath the mountains. You can't go and hide inside the seas. And the Acharyas explain that actually what he was referring to was the different 10 incarnations of Lord Krishna, where Varahadev, Matsyavatar, actually was inside the water. And Kurma Avatar was below the mountain. So he's telling, Chanura is telling, actually he was praising Krishna in that sense. So even the tongue, even if it is wrongly using against Krishna, but if it is used for Krishna, used towards Krishna, then it gets purified eventually. And similarly, we see the nose, how different devotees, like the four Kumaras, just by experiencing smell of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, they experience a transformation in their lives. So just to conclude, that when we experience Krishna in our lives, then the Srimad Bhagavatam actually is written so that people who have these mundane experiences of carnal pleasures and suspense and acts of violence, they can still experience the same thing through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then when they access the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, every sense of theirs is individually enlivened and individually enthused by presence of Krishna, and then they get purified. And then when we read pastimes like this, we don't get bewildered anymore. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. I'm sorry if I have spoken anything beyond my realizations. And it's quite late. We'll not take questions. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for enlivening our senses with your very sensual presentation with Krishna's senses and how our senses can be used in Krishna's service. I just have two questions. First is, you began with a boy borrowing so many things to attract a girl, and I didn't get the purport of that. And secondly, one very wonderful point was made and I couldn't get the full understanding of that, and that is from internally you have to see the externals and not see the externals to, from the externals to try to understand the internal. Would you just elaborate on this?
Just like the Ganga water, when it is accepted, you offer it back to Ganga. I want to offer your question back to you so that you can answer. But anyway, let me speak something. Basically, the point I was making while beginning about the boy is just to show my, whatever I'm speaking is not based on, you know, my own understanding of the scriptures, but it is borrowed from different places. And I'm just presenting it together. So nothing, no credit to me. And the second, about how when we focus on the internals and keep away from the externals, and then the internal will help us to see the external better. What I meant was that the scriptures begin, you know, most of the time, if you see the Bhagavad Gita begins with, you know, the concept of we not being the body, but we being the spirit soul. Where Krishna, you know, goes right in into who we really are, and then he brings the external factors out about duty and many other things, because based on, you know, the solidity of that understanding of who we really are, we can understand all the external things very nicely. You know, even when we speak, introduce the Gita to new people, this is how we do it, right? We speak about, you know, first we being spirit souls. And then, based on that, everything else builds up, you know, karma and so many other things built up, because the fact is established first. So the scriptures, what it does is that it kind of first zooms in into your own life and gives you an understanding of who you are. And then, based on that vision, when you see the world, you begin to see the world in a very different perspective only. That's what I meant by that. But rather, if somebody sees the external world, then he will never ever have a feeling that, you know, internally he's something else, right? Just like, you know, so basically he'll never have a feeling that he's internally a spirit soul, because the external world is so illusory and so mesmerizing. It is like entering into a cartoon, you know. If you enter into a cartoon, you will just get lost, because cartoon has so many things going on, and people are falling here and there, and, you know, so many things are going on. It's just a world of its own. So that's what I meant by saying that, you know, we need to go internal first, and then that will help us to give an external understanding. You can add more maybe.